Okay, first of all, we're going to have a look at a well-known rule that's applied to women in the face of a mitzvah aseiches man gramo. We spent quite a long time discussing that when we were doing kiddushin together, and that is that we know that there's a principle based on that Mishnah and kiddushin that a woman is exempt from any mitzvah aseh that is created by time. And the Gemara all over Shas, they have different questions about mitzvah aseh man grama. There seem to be certain contradictions, so we find in Masechet Brachot with regard to davening, with regard to keeping Shabbos and Yontif, they seem to be time bound mitzvahs. And the Gemara has all different approaches to those problems to try and demonstrate to you that, you know, tefillah, even though it has a set of times when you can, when you should, when you're able to daven, but tefillah as a concept is, you can daven anytime you really want. And when it comes to Shabbos and Yontif, they are complex mitzvot. They're not classic mitzvot aseis because they also have a lot aseh component, and therefore there's one mechayev called Shabbos, and that is made up of two different components, and you cannot therefore work with this rule that it's a mitzvah aseh shehazman grama. It's much more complex than just a mitzvah aseh. But there are mitzvot aseis which are clearly a woman is exempt from them, and that is the rule that goes across halacha. And then there are exceptions to the rule where there are certain mitzvot which women are, as we all know well, they mitzvot aseh shehazman gramas, but a woman is obligated in them. The question is, why is this true? So in the sources that I've sent you, let's have a look at a number of comments here. So first and foremost, we have this statement of Rabbi Shua ben Levi. In Masechet Megillah Daf Daled, Rabbi Shua ben Levi comes along and says, "Nashim chayavot b'mikra Megillah, she'af hein ayu b'oto anes." So even though Mikra Megillah is a mitzvah aseh shehazman grama, nevertheless, women are obligated despite the general exemption because af hein ayu b'oto anes. They were part of this particular miracle. If you flip to the next photo that I sent you, so there, I don't think I got the whole Gemara in there. Okay, sorry. So there it's a Gemara in Psachim Daf Kufchet. The Gemara there says, "V'amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, nashim chayavot b'arba'a kosot halalu, she'af hen ayu b'oto anes." Because they were also involved in this miracle. And then the last photo I sent you is from Masechet Shabbat Chaf Gimel, where there Rabbi Shua ben Levi says, "Nashim chayavot b'ner Chanukah, she'av hen ayu b'oto anes." Now, it's interesting to note here the svara that drives this particular rule, she'av hen ayu b'oto anes, that they were involved in the miracle. What does it actually mean? So if you flip back to the second picture, which is Masechet Psachim, you'll see some interesting comments over here. So yeah, the Baalei HaTosfot make a comment as follows. Hayu b'oto anes, you can see there at the bottom comment. Piresh Rashbam. The Rashbam offers the following interpretation that the reason what motivates the chiyuv for women is because they were actually involved in the miracle. And bizchutam, you know, as we know the Midrashim well, Am Yisrael had given the guys had given up hope. They see that it's not worth bringing children into a world where there's such a a Shoah type scenario, and the women are motivating the husbands, you know, because Baruch Hu gives us a mitzvah, we got to do it. As a result of that, Bishchar Nashim, that's basically what the Gemara says, Masechet Sotah as well. And the same thing, so the same thing is true over here. On that Gemara, the Rashbam makes a comment as well. V'chein gabay Mikra Megillah, same thing is true with Mikra Megillah, that Esther was the one who essentially created the miracle. And the same thing is true, you know, in Masechet Shabbat, where you start to see that there was a woman, a famous woman, Yehudit, who also was responsible for the miracle of Hanukkah. So what you see is that as far as the Rashbam is concerned, number the reason the klal, the rule, af hayna yu b'oto anes, they were also included in the miracle. That's interpreted to mean, not as it says literally, that they too were included in that miracle. It's slightly sharper than that. It's like Sha'al Yadam Nigalu, V'chein b'Megillah al yaday Esther v'Chanukah al yaday Yehudit. You know, so the Rashbam is telling you it's not just that they were included, they initiated the miracle. It occurred because of them. They played a central role in this miracle. Now, look at the Baalei HaTosfot as they continue to quote the Rashbam. The kasher, you know, the Av Mashmash Einan Ikar, or the Yerushalmi Garis, she Av Hein Ayu Boto Safek. Mashma boto sakana, the lashmid la rogula bait. So the Baalei HaTosfot are quoting a Yerushalmi. Number one, what we pointed out, that the actual phrase doesn't nice doesn't say that they were the Ikar. But and furthermore, from the Yerushalmi, it sounds like that the reason what looks to interpret is that they faced the same danger. They were boto safek, whether they would survive or not. Mashma boto sakana. They faced the same vulnerability as the men, and that's why a woman, once the danger was neutralized, what happens is that they become obligated in these particular mitzvot because they say, share the same danger. So that's how the Baalei HaTosfot learn. So it's interesting. Go back to the first photo that I sent you from Megillah Daf Daled. There we quoted Rav Shua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavot Mimikra Megillah, Sha'af Hein Ayu Boto Anes. Let's see what Rashi says. What does Rashi say? She'av hainu yu boto anais. She'av al anashim gazar haman lashmid larog la'beid minar v'atzakein tafu nashim. So Rashi over here in Megillah makes a comment which echoes the words of the Baalei HaTosfot, that unlike the Rashbam, who says that af hainu yu boto anais means that they were instrumental in the nace, and that then that crucial role that they played in the nace happening is what's mechayev women in these exceptions. Rather, like the Baalei HaTosfot said, you know, they were afenayu boto anace. They were in the danger the same way as the men were, and as a result of that, they owe shevach to Kosh Baruch Hu for neutralizing the threat. So here Rashi has taken up the swara of of the Baalei HaTosfot. Now, what's interesting is, if you look at the third photo again, where we go back to the story of Chanukah, look what Rashi says over there. Rashi says, Avinu Yu Boto Anais, Shegazru Yivanim Al Kol Betulot Hanesuot Libael the Tafsar. It's known, unfortunately, of the cruel scenario imposed upon Jewish women who were getting married, Jewish brides, that they were forced to endure the indignity of being raped by the Greek officer that was there, and only then let go back to their husbands. So therefore, when that decree was nullified, that obligates them betor af hainayu botor anais. That's the same swara as Tosfot until now. But then look what he says. Rashi adds in the last phrase, Vadidai Isha Nasa Anais. That through the involvement of a woman, you know, the miracle happened. It's really interesting this, that you've got a situation where the phrase af hainayu botor anais is subject to a machlokes rishonim, where you have a machloket as to what is the driving swara behind Afanayu, how do you interpret Afanayu Botoanes? So you have one swara, one logical approach says, because they initiated the miracle, through them the miracle happened. That's the Rashbam. The Bala Tosfot, because they were involved in the miracle, they were under the same threat, and therefore they have an obligation to give Shevach Tokosh Baruch Hu. And then you have Rashi, who kind of like, you know, it's kind of like at the end of Sheva Brochus, you know, you mix the two cups together in the case of Pesach. Whereas in the other scenarios, Chanukah and Purim, sorry, in the case of Pesach and the case of Purim, he has the svara like the Balei HaTosfot, that they were equally vulnerable. So what do we make of this Rashi? How do we understand what's going on here? Anyway, one of the suggestions that I read on this question, I saw an article by a Rav who has a number of svarim. His name is Rav Yitzchak Sender, who's a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik. And he writes, he brings from, brings a nice bunch of shitot and chidushim on topics to do with Purim. Anyway, here he suggests the following. He says that when one looks at the fact that Rav Yehoshua ben Levi made all three statements, one could actually ask the following question. Did Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi make one sweeping statement that echoes, that is echoed by this rule, Av Hainayu Boto Anais, that women are obligated in the mitzvahs of Purim, Chanukah, and Pesach, based on that concept, that they were involved in the particular miracle? And then, so the rule comes first, and then when each of the three mitzvot are discussed in detail, in each particular Gemara, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, then his statement was quoted. That's one way of looking at it. Or maybe you can say, no, that he made each of his statements independently at each juncture when discussing each particular mitzvah. And only after he made them in each case, you know, were they summarized under one heading. And the nafkamina would be that if he made a single statement to cover all three cases, then this would imply that there's one swara driving them all. And probably that's how the Rashbam and the Balei HaTosfot were working. But if you say that he made a statement in each case, one after the other, so separately, Rav Shua ben Levi looked at each sugya, then he voiced a particular principle. So we might say that in each case, he has his own unique explanation. And maybe this is what you one could suggest, and that's happening, you know, with Rashi. You know, so Rashbam and Tosfot hold that a Rishabhan lady made one sweeping statement, and therefore one swara governs each one, all of them, and that's why they give one swara. And Rashi basically might be understood to maintain that Rabbi Shimon Levi dealt with each of the mitzvot separately, and then gave different swaras for each different mitzvah. And it happened to be that when he came to the mitzvah of Neirot Chanukah, Masechet Shabbos, Chav Gimel, so there Rashi understood that according to Rabbi Yeshua, both swaras were, were applicable. So that's one chiddush. Now, let's have a look at the actual concept and try and break apart what's the mechayev, what actually happens here in this statement that Avhein hayu boto anes. What lies behind this concept? So, we have one of two ways of looking at this, and this is how Rav Elul Brisker, the Griz, attempts to unpack it. So he says like this. He says this concept of Avhein hayu boto anes, how are we to understand its meaning? Is it that under ordinary circumstances we would say that women are exempt from these mitzvot because they are time bound? However, under the exceptional circumstances, because of the element of Avhein hayu boto anes, we say now that a new mitzvah has been created for them, so that women could also commemorate the miracle which happened to them as well as to the men. And so, if this is true, then we might say that although the women were not yet obligated in the initial mitzvah, because it was a mitzvah asay shazman grama, but because of a chiddush of Chazal, a rabbinic innovation arising from the fact that they too were part of a miracle, they were now equally obligated to acknowledge the miracle by performing the same mitzvah as the men. So in our case, reading the Megillah on Purim, Pesach, to drink the four cups of wine, and Chanukah, to light the Neirot Chanukah. And that's how we understand what's actually happening behind the scenes of Avhein hayu boto anes. Each scenario is really a mitzvah asay shazman grama. There's nothing we can do about it. Women are exempt, min haTorah, they're exempt. Or midrabbanan, even they're exempt. But the exception now takes shape. Chazal see that there's a svara to create a new mitzvah because of Avhein hayu boto anes. Or you could interpret, no, that Avhein hayu boto anes comes along and neutralizes the consideration of the zman grama nature of these mitzvot. So even though normally women are turot, they're exempt because, they're exempt, but because they were saved by the miracle, that transcends the exemption, the time-bound exemption. And women are now obligated to perform the mitzvah because of special circumstances. So these are the two approaches, the two different angles that the Griz, Rabbi Soloveitchik, he wants to, the Lomdus, he tries to unpack to see, what he thinks drives and empowers Avhein hayu boto anes. Now, let's join the dots together here. When we first looked at a svara, what does Avhein hayu boto anes mean? So we came up with the Balei Tosfot and the Rashbam. Right, so what did we say? We said the Rashbam said women were instrumental in bringing about the nes. The Balei Tosfot said no, they were under equal threat, like the men. And that's what Avhein hayu boto anes means. So those are the two svaras. Then we looked at the Griz, and he suggested that there are two ways to learn, what Avhein hayu boto anes does from a Lomdisha point of view, al pi halacha, what actually happens there? What does it achieve? So Svara number one is to say either a new mitzvah was created for the benefit of women, so that they could give shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we do it the same way that the men do it. Or you say, no, not a new mitzvah was created, but rather the zman grama element, the time-bound exemption, was overridden or superseded. And now when we look to see what this, how this is applied, how these two different svaras and two different approaches to understand what the rule is actually doing, we can possibly see now certain practical nafkaminas, consequences that arise out of these different svaras and understanding of how the rule actually works. So one of the famous questions that we get with regard to the mitzvah of women's involvement in Mikra Megillah is to question whether there's any difference between how the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah applies to men and applies to women. And if you say there is a difference, then would you say that women could be moitzi men their obligation? Or would you say, no, there's a mitzvah on each of us, each group, to hear the Megillah, but it's slightly nuanced differently. And therefore, lechatchila, you wouldn't be able to, a woman wouldn't be able to moitzi a man. So this is the famous machlokes between the Rishonim and the Bahag. Let's take the Bahag and Rashi. So the Bahag comes along and says that women are only called upon to hear the Megillah, but are not included in the chiyuv to read the Megillah. And since the nature of the obligation is different, so therefore a woman cannot be moitzi a man helping him fulfill his obligation because her obligation is different. Her obligation is to listen, and a man's obligation is to read. Now, that particular distinction is not held by everybody. Rashi comes along and says that Avhain means that both men and women are equally obligated in this mitzvah. That's equally. So if you want to understand the machlokes between the Bahagin and those who hold like him and Rashi and those who side with Rashi, you could possibly suggest using the Chakira, the analysis that we learned through the Gris. So the Bahag who holds there's a new mitzvah called hearing the Megillah as opposed to reading the Megillah. The Bahag would hold that Av Hain creates a new mitzvah for women. And that's why women and men have different obligations, and consequently, women cannot be moitzi men in their obligation. Whereas Rashi would come along and say that no, Av Hain didn't create a new mitzvah. Av Hain neutralizes the zman grama element. It does it supersedes the time bound factor, and therefore the original obligation, which was originally only imposed upon men, is now imposed upon women, and they are equally engaged in the same obligation. And therefore, women can be moitzi men in the obligation to read the Megillah. That's how we would apply this analysis to the concept. Now let's have a look at an expanded chiddush on this theme by the Gris. We discussed it a little bit. You might remember it as we develop it while we were doing kiddushin and the nature. Of a chiddush by Rabbeinu Tam, we spoke about the nature of an Eved Kenani towards the world of mitzvot. So let's set it up quickly so you can see the concept taking shape. A yid goes down to the slave market, he buys himself a non-Jewish slave. The slave is an Eved Kenani. He becomes the property of his owner. He becomes so integral a part of the owner's, metaltalin or property, that there's kind of like a process by which, in order for this eved to be seen as mamish part of the fabric of the household, the eved has got to go through a quasi conversion. So you take the eved kanani and you give him a bris and you toivel him in a mikveh. And at the end of the process, he has a certain level of Kedushat Yisrael there. It's not a full level of, it's a partial level of Kedushat Yisrael. He's not technically Jewish. You know, that may come later, at a later stage, when he's freed. There might be a necessity to go a second time to a mikveh, depending on the Machlokes Rishonim about that. And only then would he become a fully fledged Jew. But from the time that he's brished and toiveled at the beginning of his relationship as an Eved Kanani, he has partial Kedushat Yisrael. And how is that partial Kedushat Yisrael expressed? That is asur in all mitzvot lot asay, but is only chayav in mitzvot asays like a woman, which means the Eved Kanani is exempt from mitzvot asay shasman graman. Like a woman, that's the basic concept. So now the shaila is as follows. At the time we went through this Chiddush of Reb Chaim, we asked the question, does this mean that an Eved and a woman have the same status? An Eved Kanani and a woman have the same status? Is that what it means? Because they're both equally obligated in mitzvot aseis, and they're both equally exempt in mitzvot aseis shazman grama, and they're both equally obligated in the lot aseis. So Rav Soloveitchik quoted Reb Chaim interpreting this in such a way that there's a stark difference between an Eved Kanani's Kedushat Yisrael and a woman's Kedushat Yisrael. And again, Reb Chaim used this to interpret Rabbeinu Tam in this whole discussion about a woman volunteering to do a mitzvah asay. Even though she's exempt, she volunteers to do it. Can she make a brocha on that mitzvah asay that she volunteers to do? And the question is, why shouldn't she? Well, the Rambam and most of the Sfaradi Rishonim hold that she can't make a brocha on a mitzvah that's volunteered because it is not congruent with the nusach ha-brocha, which says that asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. We make a brocha that Hashem sanctified us with the mitzvah we are about to do and commanded us in this mitzvah. But Hashem never commanded the woman in the mitzvah asay shazman grama or the mitzvah she wants to volunteer. Volunteer by its very nature means that you weren't commanded. So you can't say vetzivanu, therefore you can't say the nusach ha-brocha, therefore you can do the mitzvah, bavakasha, no problem, you know, but you won't make a brocha before it. And Rabbeinu Tam's position in the minhag of Ashkenazim is that even though a woman volunteers the mitzvah and is not obligated, she still can say vetzivanu. So what did Reb Chaim explain? Reb Chaim explained like this. The crystallization of the sanctity of Am Yisrael takes place and evolves in stages. Stage one, of course, Baruch Hu reveals himself to Klal Yisrael, Maman Har Sinai, and in Mitzaveh, everybody in Torah and Mitzvah, and everybody goes Naaseh V'Nishma, and we are all obligated and infused with the same Kedushat Yisrael. Stage two, now that we're all infused with the same level of Kedusha, by and large, certain levels of Kedusha are adjusted. The Kohen has a unique level of Kedusha. You know, a woman has a unique level of Kedusha. And the uniqueness is expressed by the fact that after being obligated, HaKadosh Baruch Hu then released one from exempted from the obligation. So in the case of a woman, she has full Kedushat Yisrael, stage one. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu exempts her, despite the full Kedushat Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu exempts her from tam bound mitzvahs. Let's just say, for the sake of this discussion, to promote Shalom Bayit, recognizing that the woman's obligations to the sanctity of the home would need her entire focus, and having time-bound mitzvahs would take away from that. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu exempted her from time-bound mitzvahs. And therefore, when you say the bracha, Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav, what Rabbeinu Tam means is that Hashem first commanded everybody, including women, in the mitzvah, v'tzivanu, and then implied in the continuation of the bracha is Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu uftaranu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded women, and then he exempted them. So the kedusha doesn't differentiate. Rather, there was an exemption to the mitzvah, I say. So this is how Reb Chaim then looks at an eved. Compare this to what I've said about a woman, and you'll see that the eved is very different. There was no such thing as HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanding an eved Kenani in mitzvah. No such thing. Rather, the eved Kenani was bought by the Baal, the Balabait, koine the eved Kenani. At that point in time, the eved Kenani then goes through a process which gives him a certain amount of kedusha, but he only it's not like he gets full kedusha and then he gets an exemption on what that full kedusha means. He only ever starts off with partial kedusha, and the expression of the partial kedusha results in the same level of obligation that a woman has towards mitzvah aseh shasban graman, but the kedusha is very, very different. That's how Reb Chaim explains the comparison between Eved Kenani and a woman lagabe mitzvah aseh shasban grama. The result is the same, but the process to achieve the result is very, very different. So now we ask the following question: What do you think about an Eved Kenani was bought by a Balabos, a Yid, and now comes Purim? What would you say about an Eved Kenani legabe the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah? You know, at first blush, you would say, hey, you know, an Eved Kenani is obligated in mitzvot aseh shasman grama is exactly like a woman is, right? And therefore, maybe an Eved Kenani is obligated in the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, just like a woman is obligated. You know, but you would then take a step back and say, well, one second, what does afhainayu boto anais mean? That's why a woman is obligated in the mitzvah aseh shasban grama of Mikra Megillah, you know, or Chanukah, or what does that mean? So if we now factorize, you know, according to the Rashbam came along and said that a woman is obligated in this exceptional mitzvah aseh shasban grama. Why? Because afhainayu boto anais, which means that the miracle came about as a result of the zchut of Jewish women. Well, if that's driving the obligation, then what would you say about an Eved Kenani? That Eved Kenani would not be obligated. They weren't responsible for bringing about. There's no zchut in an Eved Kenani bischuto, you know, or bischuta, you know, in a shivcha, whatever, that there was a miracle. No, not at all. So if the Svar is like the Rashbam, you would say, no, Eved Kenani, in principle, a nice way of bottom lining what happens is that the result is that for mitzvah aseh shasban grama, a woman is patur And the same result is true with Evakanani. But when it comes to understanding what drives the chiyuv of the mitzvah, you don't just say stam. Evakanani is like a woman in all mitzvahs. In all mitzvah says. All mitzvah lotah says. No, it's not so posh. There's actually nuances here. I find that nice is a unique thing to women. It's not going to do with Evakanani. And therefore, you know, this is this we would say that, you know, since the Eved is not responsible for the nice, he's not obligated, and we don't create a new mitzvah for them. But if we were to say that women were obligated, you know, because of the consideration of Afeinu Yuboto Anais, and Afeinu Yuboto Anais means that they were in the same danger as were the men. So what would you say then? Could you suggest that if you were a yid in Persia, you know, or in Eretz Israel, Greek dominated Eretz Israel, right? In Mitzrayim, you were an Eved Kanani. Were you in danger as well? If you're just an Eved of a Jewish balabos or family. Well, I mean, you could argue the point. You could say, Amalek came along in the guise of Haman, Lashmid, Larogu, Labay, to wipe out everything. And I'm wondering if that's exactly why we have the mitzvah, Lashmid, Larogu, Labay, you know, just like they wanted to do to us and they will do to us. If we allow them, we can't allow them to do it. And they would destroy everything just because it's Jewish associated. If you say that, then maybe the Eved Kanani would have been in danger. And therefore, if he would have been in danger just by being associated with the Jewish balabos, because he's his possession, they would have walked in and killed everybody. And therefore, Aveinu Yuboto Anais applies to the Eved Kanani. And therefore, maybe you can make a case for the Eved Kanani that is chayev, you know, empowered by Aveinu Yuboto Anais when it comes to these kinds of miracles. That's how we would understand this machlokes. Now, it is possible to argue with his lomdus, and you could say, as does the Ger Rebbe, the Sfas Emes, he writes the following. He says, look, even if you can convince me that the woman and the Eved were under the same threat, and they were both in danger, still, I would argue that this consideration would not affect the state of the Eved. Why? Because when women today inherit a chiyuv based on Afein Hayubot Anais, says the Sfas Emes, what's really happening is that there's kind of like a spiritual DNA passed down from our Jewish woman, Bobbers, going back all the way to the very beginning of time, to Mamre Har Sinai, including the Purim story and the Hanukkah story, etc. And therefore, our Jewish women today are by extension descendants of the Jewish women who came before them. And therefore, the chiyuv for Jewish women today remains because the women who were in danger in those days are the direct ancestors of Jewish women today. Whereas you wouldn't be able to say the same thing with an Eved. You could convince me that the Eved, you know, Bayamim Ahem, you know, was in danger. But Bazman Hazeh, there's no connection between an Eved Kanani today and an Eved Kanani that lived by Amimaim. So says the Sfas Emes, even with the Svora that you think the longest, you know, of the Griz, so to speak, he's not convinced that should be applied to an Eved Kanani as such. And since, you know, there's no Avodim today that can trace their dissension down back down the track. So therefore, the principle of Avheina, you bought to Anais, no matter how you interpret it, Only women are obligated in the mitzvah, and have they can own him or not? That's a interesting way to look at it. Now, looking back at Rashi, so until now, what have we got, Joe? We had two explicit svaras adopted by the Rashbam and the Baal HaTosfot, two different svaras, and each different svara we attempted to explain as an outgrowth of an understanding of what empowers what how Af Heinayu Bota Nes works, either as the creation of a new mitzvah, as a result of the schut of the woman being crucial to the miracle, or not as a new mitzvah, but rather, an overriding of the exemption because they face the same danger as everybody else. That's how it's sort of neat at that point in time. Now we turn our attention to Rashi and try and work out how are we going to interpret Rashi's approach, where there's kind of like a recognition of both svaras and the use of a hybrid, when it comes to Chanukah. So there's a Torah journal called Moriah, which has a discussion on this, and the Chiddush comes from the pen of Rabbi Yeruchim Perlman, who's known as the Minsk Gadol, and he raises this question, but he raises the question first by quoting the question of the Chavot Yair. The Chavos Yair basically writes in his tshuva the following question on all of these Gemaras. It says like this: we've been taught by Rabbi Shu ben Levi that despite the exemption, the general exemption of Zman Grama to positive mitzvot, there are certain exceptions to the rule where women are obligated because of Af Heinayu Bota Anes. Now, let's take a step back for a second. We know that there are a number of legal sources in the world of halacha that obligate us in various mitzvot. Now, what are the legal sources in halacha that obligate us? So just quickly, we'll go through some of them. We'll say like this. The most direct obligation comes halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Because Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu relays it over to Klal Yisrael, he has a mitzvah. Then we have another source of halacha, which is not as explicit as halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, mamash directly related, but something we call midot sha'Torah nidreshet b'hen. You have a Torah text. The Torah gives you the outline of the mitzvah. There's not one mitzvah in Torah shebichtav that is actually fully explained with the details. You get the general gist, but none of the mitzvot can actually be performed properly unless you have Torah Shebaal Peh. So you need a way of darshaning out of the Torah text. You need a way of deducing, how to perform this mitzvah d'oraita. That is broadly spoken, is what we call hermeneutic law application. Hermeneutics is a fancy English word to say midot, the equations used to derive from the Torah text the mitzvot d'oraita. So you've got halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, the clearest exposition of halacha you can have. Midot sha'Torah nidreshet b'hen, one level down in terms of clarity from Moshe Rabbeinu. But still, it's mitzvah d'oraita, it's in the text, it's a legal source. Then number three, you have a pasuk, which in Parashat Shoftim tells us we have an obligation, mina Torah, to follow Chazal's dictates, such that lo tasur, you shall not deviate from whatever they say, yamin u'smol, neither right nor left. That's known in the world of halacha as lo tasur. Lo tasur means that Chazal have a license to enact, decree, innovate new halachas, whether it's to protect the halachas in the form of a gezeira, or to respond to something and make a takana, you know, to protect something, or to innovate new halachas, dinim drabanan. Chazal have license to do that. And even though the legal source is not on the same level as a dindo writer, but the Torah obligates you to follow them. And so the third category of halacha is generated by isurim takanot gzairot rabbanan. Okay, so now, if we have an explicit pasuk that tells me that Chazal have the license to generate new obligations, lo tasur, you're not allowed to deviate from what they tell you. So why do you need afhena you boto anais to obligate a woman in Mikra Megillah? Hare, you have a rabbinic obligation to read the Megillah, all the mitzvahs of Purim. You have an obligation to them. Chazal said so. So why isn't Lo Tasur, which is a Torah admonition to follow Dinim Drabanan, why isn't that enough of a mechayev to say to a woman, you're obligated? Why do you need afena you boto anais? This is the classic question of the Chabot Yair. So again, quickly, these three new mitzvot, Pesach, Purim, Chanukah, right? They're all based on Lo Tasur, the license given to Chazal to generate new mitzvahs. So wouldn't this imply that women are definitely obligated in these three mitzvahs relating to the three exceptional cases? So why do you have to justify women and their obligation toward these three mitzvahs by the addition of another unrelated concept of afena yu boto anais? Now, in order to answer this, there's a chiddush by the Ran in drush number 7 in the Drashot HaRan. He makes a comment. He qualifies the Rambam, where the Rambam says something interesting. The Rambam says that only rabbinic gezeiras or takanot, which have an explicit smach, a support, or are alluded to in the Torah itself, ought to be included in the negative commandment of Lo Tasur. But if there's a new mitzvah, a new takana, where there's no smach or ikar in the Torah, they are not included in this mitzvah Lo Tasei of Lo Tasur. Ein ze rak bidvarim sheyesh lehem ikar usmach b'Torah. That's how the Ran interprets. So that answers up this question over here. According to Chazal, let's try and source now, what is the origin of Mikra Megillah, we're looking for an origin of the mitzvah, and resulting the Mikra Megillah would be an expansion of that same original mitzvah. It'd be kind of a hint in the Torah for the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. Where would you find such a thing? Anyway, we don't have to look too far. In the Kriyas HaTorah of Purim, in the morning, we read from Parshat Bishalach, the war of Yoshua, led by Yoshua against Amalek. After the war has sent Amalek to flight, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, K'tov zot zikaron ba'sefer. You know, write down, record this history, this war, ba'sefer, in a Megillah, in the Sefer. Now, this idea of recording, let's call it the battle against Amalek, is quickly by extension, expanded to include, Ktov Zotzikaron Yoshua, read it in front of Am Yisrael that Timchet. And the Megillah is kind of like an expansion of that. So therefore, this is kind of like a suggestion as to maybe the mitzvah Megillah is based on this pasuk, and if it derives its justification from a verse in the Torah, then for sure, even according to the Chiddush of the Ran, it doesn't need the support of Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis. So, when the Gemara includes women in the Chiyuv, the Gemara doesn't use that Sfora of Ktov Zikaron Basefer. So it's on the basis of Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis. It's to neutralize the time-bound factor, because it seems that the mitzvah is mamasha mitzvah shalman grama, and a woman would normally be exempt from it. Only because they shared the same danger as did the men, so we disregard the time-bound factor in this case. So when you're looking to try and see how these suggestions of interpreting Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis apply, when we come to when we came to Rashi gave us like the use of the option of using both svaras, but he generally used the Tosfot Svara of women being as vulnerable as the men, and their salvation motivates the Chiyuv to read the Megillah. And came to Chanukah, he threw in the hybrid. And we're trying to work out how to understand Rashi and appreciate where he's going. And so this is what we understand. When it came to Mikra Megillah, we have a source in the Torah which kind of like anchors it. And therefore, because there's a source in the Torah, so one would ask a very sharp question: why do you need Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis? You would say that it's a you would say that okay, there's something in the Torah which would obligate them, but it's a time-bound mitzvah. So therefore, you sort of like kind of stuck there. So Chazal came along and gave a bit of muscle to Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis. We exempt women from the chiyuv, and then we need something. We need something to obligate them in that chiyuv, because they're exempt because it's a time-bound mitzvah. So Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis overrides the exemption, but in relation to Chanukah, you got no support from Torah itself. And so therefore, in order to obligate women in the mitzvah of Neirot Chanukah, you can only depend on Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis. And yeah, therefore, Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis carries more weight by Neirot Chanukah than it does, by the mitzvah of Megillah, of Purim. And therefore, that's maybe what lies behind Rashi when he says that by Chanukah, number one, there's Avhein Ayu Bor Toa Neis the same way by Purim. And number two, but in Chanukah, there's no way to obligate. We need the other obligation too. So women were responsible for the creation of the mitzvah, and that's the essential reason why women are obligated, in this thing. And we go back when we get to Pesach. There we ask ourselves, well, what do you do about the Arba Kosot? Well, yeah, Rashi tells you it's based on the Arba Loshonot of Geula, Vo'otzeiti, Vitzati, V'galti, V'lakafti. So there in Masechet Psachim, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi comes along and tells us that women are obligated in the four cups of wine. The same question: why did Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi have to tell us this fact? Why aren't they obligated anyway, based on what the Mishnah says beforehand? That they're obligated. The Mishnah before it, Psachim Tzaditet, says that they're obligated because of Vo'otzeiti, Vitzati, V'galti, V'lakachti.
Why do you have to have Afanayubato Anais? Maybe it's because that the mitzvah of the Arba Kosot can be viewed as an entirely new mitzvah, one ordained by Chazal, and we might think, therefore, that women are not obligated. There's no source for it in Torah. So since it's a time-bound mitzvah, a woman should be exempt. So you need not. That's why I need Afanayubato Anais. They're equally obligated in the mitzvah because they were equally in danger. And therefore, this factor neutralizes the time-bound component of the mitzvah. Okay, so run out of time a bit there, but I'll leave it there. So at least there's kind of like a Lomdisha approach to what Avhein really means and how it applies and what and the koyach that exists when we work with it. Okay, so I'll leave it there. Wish you a Purim Sameach. And we should all celebrate Yeshuot v'Nechamot in all its manifestations as we need it.
Amazing.
Okay.
Thanks, Sir Davey.
Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
Um,